And hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Double Cross Radio, coming to you live from the Jefferson Republic, which is pretty much anywhere we want it to be these days. But for now, we are located in Southern Oregon, but it could be Northern California, and it could be somewhere else someday too. It's just wherever freedom is going to be where Jefferson Republic is. It's so right, we have
on the left.
I'm joined tonight with my co-host Drew Lamb. Drew, welcome back, and it's nice to be with you again.
Good to hear your voice, Chuck.
I think Randy is talking a little bit in the back. we're going to be joined for just we have a breaking news flash, and we're going to as soon as we get things cooked up here, we're going to have a special guest on for a few minutes to tell you about some breaking news that happened actually last night. We posted some of this on our Facebook page and shared it around a little bit. Randy, we have our guest there. Is Dr. Carpenter there?
Oh, you're wired. Okay.
I think we're going to have a little bit of technical disgrace. Anyway, in the meantime, after that is over, this is being the last Thursday of the month, we're going to be joined by Dennis Linthicum, and he's waiting in the wings. Dennis, welcome back to the show.
You bet. It's always great to come back. I wish we did it more than once a month.
Well, we might have to make you a permanent co-host. That would be awesome.
In the background, what you do, just
and so Randy's trying to get Dr. Carpenter hooked up into our call.
Right? Did you ever watch your computer. Watch your computer. I'm going to try to pull you into the call. You should see. Okay, I'm fixing to put the phone down because I got to get on the headphones. Just a second.
I can hear her on the phone. So anyway, I'm going to give everybody a little bit of background while we're waiting for Dr. Carpenter to get hooked up here. Dr. Carpenter had come up with an innovative way to treat some forms of cancer using laser technology. And she's, by the way, she's not a medical doctor. So in order to do this, she had to have a medical doctor on hand while these things were performed. And she had several people whose lives who were considered to have terminal cancer, and she was able to remove the cancer without having to go through the chemotherapy, which actually the chemotherapy kills most of the people that they use on it. So by doing that, she was able to save several lives.
No, I don't think so.
And then, maybe Randy could mute his microphone while he's getting Dr. Carpenter on. But anyway, in doing that, she got the attention of people probably not at the FDA, probably in the pharmaceutical industry. They make hundreds of thousands of dollars on every cancer treatment, every chemotherapy treatment that they do, and having somebody that could do like a $10,000 laser treatment and follow-up medical care to make sure it heals properly and everything, that was probably going to really cut into their bottom line considerably if that became popular, because that's something that could be administered almost everywhere in the United States by anybody trained to use a laser. And so they came after her pretty hard. They did a raid on her business, and they took everything as evidence. And they went through their files, and then they tried to get her former patients to sue her, and she's been kind of twisting on a string for the last 2 years waiting for a grand jury to return an indictment. And yesterday, evidently, they came to a decision, and they came in and arrested her and charged her with 41 counts of fraud. And so she's going to have to go into a federal court. Now, you've heard us talk before about how we feel federal courts are pretty much like a kangaroo court. They have their own juries. They obviously have their own grand jury, because I don't see how this is in any way in kind of medical fraud with the patients. The patients that she had were successfully treated, and so it's really strange to me that they are even bringing this case to begin with. I think it's just because the FDA didn't put their rubber stamp on it and make this something that now she has to charge horrendous amount of money for to get back all the time and effort spent getting clinical trials done that are approved by the FDA. And by the way, the FDA, because they're full of people from the pharmaceutical industry, they always set these trials up so because they know that what could possibly work. So they set them up so that they won't work. That's what they did to Dr. Brzezinski. He ended up in prison for a short period of time, and while he was there, they tried to steal his patents that he had on his treatment, which is also, the only people he got to treat were people who were given, maybe a month to live, and he had a 30% survival rate, which was, I think, incredible for people that were kind of already written off as being, get your house in order, and a lot of them were children. One of his patients I was reading the other day is, she's married and she has a family. She has 3 or 4 children. And that was somebody who was given weeks to live. And anyway, Dr. Carpenter was performing the same kind of service for humanity. She was there to make some money on it. She didn't want to do this as a donation, but she wasn't charging the outrageous prices that the pharmaceutical companies charge for their, I don't really know too many people who have survived chemotherapy more than, most of them die within 5 years. That's why they call you a cancer survivor if you live longer than 5 years. And the reason they die is because it destroys your immune system, so you're subject to all sorts of other diseases. And when you finally do succumb to something, they always say we died from complications from this illness or this illness. It was the chemotherapy which destroyed the immune system and left that patient defenseless against all illnesses and diseases. So you can tell, I guess, it's kind of snuck in there how I feel about chemotherapy.
So he just put a message up. I'm having a problem adding her to the call.
Okay. That's not working. So, Randy, I don't want to use all of our time up on this.
So you can't get your computer online?
So this is Randy talking to Dr. Carpenter. She's having trouble getting her computer going. So anyway, she's probably going to be even more upset now because the computers are a frustrating thing. I know exactly how she's feeling right now. So while we're waiting for that, Drew, do we have a quick farm report too?
She says,
you're going to have me do tech support and farm report.
Support and farm report. Okay.
I'm gonna try to patch her in. So just bear with me here.
Okay.
And
Skin, if you had any problem turning it off yesterday.
No.
No.
Here's what we're gonna do. Randy, I'm gonna have you mute your microphone. And we're gonna go on into our regular part of the thing. We're gonna talk about a few things that reveal or pertain to the elections. And then when we get her online or anything, we will suspend that conversation and go directly to her, okay? Okay. Okay, so Dennis, are you there and ready to go? Okay.
I am.
The first thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is, Oregon is unique among all the 50 states in that it has unique way of voting, the vote by mail. And this isn't a perfect system. It has some pluses and some minuses. I think one of the things that's a plus is a lot more votes get cast. Now, the negative is we're not sure if those are actually coming from the people who they were sent to. So a lot of ballots get tossed out because the signatures might be just a little bit different. Now, when I signed up to register to vote, that was a long time ago. My signature has changed a little bit over time. I'm not sure. I think mine is still passing the test because they send you a notification if your ballot gets tossed out. I haven't got that kind of notification yet. But there's still some real problems with the system. It hasn't quite been all ironed out. I don't really advise any state to take this. They might want to wait until Oregon gets it working a little bit better than it's working, and we've been doing this for a long time. What is your feeling on vote by mail, Dennis?
I actually don't like the vote by mail because I think the negatives outweigh the positives. Look, there's no warrant for saying more votes is a better decision, because what we see is the fallacy of majority rule. And we can have a great discussion if you want to get into the idea of majority rule, but
I think we're going to.
So that's really what this boils into, is because you'll hear Democrats and Republicans go, get out the vote, get out the vote. And the get out the vote mantra ignores the fact that what we want is an educated vote. What we want is a judicious, thoughtful process with regard to decision making for efficiency and form of government. And to think that somehow getting this guy or that guy to throw his vote in, it doesn't matter who he votes for, as long as he votes, is really naive at best, because what we want is we want people thinking clearly about the process and making a judicious decision and an appropriate decision given the financial and economic consequences of their decision. Is it a good thing or not to vote this way or that way? And so what we do is we reduce the vote to simply a popularity contest. Is Barack Obama a popular president? In some quarters, yes, and he gains great momentum. Is it good for a nation? I think overall, you know, the people would start to wonder if they've made the right decision if they were to look out at the economic policy. Remember, $18 trillion in debt is $18 trillion that will land on the back of the next generation, because you and I aren't willing to pay it. If you and I were willing to pay it, our taxes would go up and we would cheer while writing the check. The truth is nobody is willing to pay it, and that's why we keep printing money to solve this tragedy. And every time you print money to solve a tragedy, that makes more and more people say, oh, well, it'll be okay someday in the future. That someday in the future is going to come to pass in our children's lifetime and in their children's lifetime, and they won't receive the bennies that the people who are eating the ham sandwiches today are enjoying.
That's absolutely correct, and they don't get a vote.
It won't boot down. You hold the power button.
So we're still having Randy, can you mute yourself there a little bit?
5, 10 seconds and then turn it back on.
Yeah. I mean, that actually sounds like Vince. But anyway, I think you're absolutely right. Those young people don't get it. Some of them aren't even born yet, but they have no vote in this matter, and they're being saddled with the debt that they're not going to be able to repay. It's going to basically enslave them to something that they're never going to see a benefit from.
Right, and so then you have to ask yourself, well, why are we so proud about getting all these people to vote? Well, like, what makes that something we can just say with pride was a great thing to do, especially when people are voting for benefits today that land on the backs and shoulders of the next generation and the next generation and the next generation? Nobody in the United States of America should be proud of $18 trillion of borrowings from the future, because what that means is we're taking money out of future spending column and putting it in today's pocket, and that can't possibly be a moral good. And so why we think get out the vote is a good thing is beyond me. What we need is we need to get out smart votes and logical votes and realistic votes and moral votes, because right now this is a moral tragedy that we're throwing a noose around future generations and we're saddling them with this debt, because you and I are going to enjoy the bennies of it is crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And
He didn't cry.
I got all this other stuff. I'm trying to remember the thought that popped into my mind there, and I'm not good at multitasking anymore. I think I forget what I was going to say all the time. There's other technical problem going on, but on this issue, I'm back when this country was founded, and we set up there were actually requirements for voting. One of them was that you had to be a property owner, because they were afraid of a mob voting themselves benefits
from
people, you know, a minority that maybe had assets. And
right.
that exact thing has happened. What is this?
Yeah, well, and what's interesting about that is the whole idea, if the federal government is going to step outside of its legitimate boundaries, the enumerated powers and the jurisdictional responsibility that are highlighted in the Constitution, if the federal government steps outside of those boundaries, then how do we hold the federal government accountable?
That's a good question. That's a real good question. Everybody should ponder that. Is there any way today to do that? It would be pretty difficult, I think.
Well, they've got all the cards. Well, and that's what look at the our liberty is founded on the idea of the keen citizen who is the avenger and the spy and the liberty lover who's fully invested in his own freedom. And today what we have is we've got people who are fully invested in getting goodies out of the bag. Even when it comes to Oregon, everybody is enamored with, for example, Greg Walden, because he stands up for Oregon. And the truth is, Greg Walden doesn't stand up for anything that means Oregon, because everything he stands up for means a larger federal government. So the larger federal government problem is the real issue that we face, because right now Greg Walden and the four other representatives in Oregon makes five, and our senator makes six, and our other senator makes seven. Every state gets two senators and then representatives based on population. That's seven individuals out of 535. What makes anybody in Oregon think we have a fighting chance against the 535 others that, you know, will carry the majority rule day when that comes to pass? Right.
And then you take into consideration the fact that our representative he's received so much in the way of campaign contributions from places outside the state of Oregon, it's very doubtful that he represents the state of Oregon at all anymore. That's just talk. He really seems like, you know, he was the main principal sponsor of the SOPA legislation, which is a horrible act of legislation. It was just being pushed by the telecom industry, and he was their boy. He was doing that, and he received over $600,000 in donations from that industry. It's He's representing them, not us. So anyway, I see we have our special guest, our other special guest on, and a phone call, and she's going to give us an emergency update. And I think this will actually tie in a little bit to what Dennis was saying about how do we hold the government accountable. This is a government that's gone out of control and actually imprisoned her for a day while they booked her or whatever they do. Dr. Carpenter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Can you give us a quick
answer?
Well,
it was a real shocker yesterday. Yeah. I was at my tiny place, and I was trying to rush to finish up the costume for my granddaughter, the real one. And somebody knocked at the door pretty hard. And I opened the door, and there it was, the infamous Jeremy Bain saying that I was being arrested. I was under arrest. And I asked for what, and he said, oh, there are many, actually, he said several charges, and that was it. That they came, let's see, two policemen and Jeremy Bain, and but Jeremy Bain, again, was wearing a police jacket, and he's not a policeman, and he was leading the arrest. And then they had a policewoman coming in and to search me. She was afraid that I could have something in the pocket that could stick her, and a tissue, unless a tissue. Anyway, so, but they didn't read the Miranda rights, and they didn't, and he didn't explain the charges, and they took me away to a detention center, and I was booked, and it was ridiculous. Beside the fingerprint, he even took the DNA a sample to put it in the records for the sex offenders. What does that get to do with anything? And then
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Nothing at all.
It's more bizarre by the moment. Go ahead, keep going.
I think all he's trying to do is searching if he can find anything on me because I have a squeaky clean record. But anyway, and so I was waiting, and then finally I was led through a couple of doors. I was again searched, and then I was booked and took pictures and everything. And then I sat there waiting to brought. They said some horrible stuff that I couldn't eat. And then just late at night, I was brought in the back. And by the way, I was put in solitary confinement. Which is means you don't have a bed, you don't have a pillow, you don't have a chair, you don't have toilet paper, you don't have anything. Just a blanket. Your clothes taken away. You're just having a blanket and try to sleep on the hard floor with the blanket and with the smelly floor, smelly toilet, horrible. And people in other cells. And, you know, the solitary confinement is all blocked in, and you have this block that closes, the one that the tiny opening that they pass thing to you. And other people were hollering, screaming, banging on the door. I couldn't get any sleep. And then I had no idea what time it was because there are no clocks and they wouldn't let you keep a watch. So I waited, and then I had no idea what time it was this morning when this woman from health services, I don't know, she was interviewing me in case I was dangerously suicidal. And I told her, if somebody's suicidal and you put him in this condition of this room, they are going to definitely decide to kill themselves. Okay? Because of the condition. But anyway, and then they sent in some kind of temporary bed so I could rest some more till I was given clothes. And then I was transported to the courthouse where I saw all sorts of people. Well, probation officer, somebody else, anyway. And then finally, at 2 p.m., I was brought in the room with the judge. And I was released temporarily, of course. I given an attorney, which is, he's a, you know, public defender. And he gave me some good information, though, anyway. And so then he said that I was going to be released this afternoon, and so I was brought back to the detention center, and I waited, and then finally they decided to let me have my clothes back, and instead of the orange stuff, which should have been red because it's a federal case, and then I wait until they were ready to let me go. And so my daughter expected me to be, and you can have her tell you what happened. She was there. I didn't see her, but she was there when they were doing the questioning and enter my plea. And by the way, what they claimed that I was, what, 45, 44 counts. and they're all called fraud. Transportation fraud, and I don't know what that means, because the people translate fraud, whatever, because they travel to see me. And that could be my fraud if they decided to come and see me. But anyway, the other is mail fraud and wire fraud. And everything is fraud, 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 and I intentionally deceive the people by telling them that this is a fraudulent treatment, then having them come in and pay for it. Like a patient go anywhere and don't pay for a treatment. But they claim that this was a fraudulent one, and they ignore all the people that said that they were successful. They just use a few cases of patients that decided to go back to standard treatment. And, of course, they were mutilated and so on. So,
yeah, and the people go back to the standard treatment, they get killed by the chemotherapy, and then they blame it on you. And it's which is just totally absurd. And if they would hold the same standards of up to the people that take chemotherapy, most of whom perish, and actually
then wouldn't be any oncologists left. They'd all be in jail.
That's right. The Patrick Swayze, was it Patrick Swayze or that's his dad? I don't know.
Yeah.
He went in for cancer treatment and he died shortly after. He died from the treatment, and they said it was
cancer.
He
died, and you could see it turning into a skeleton. Okay.
Yeah, it was the treatment that killed him.
They don't have the same
standard of judgment for this chemotherapy thing because it has a FDA stamp of approval on it. Well, that was bought and paid for by the people that came up with the chemotherapy. It doesn't have any science behind it. They paid for the science to come out exactly the way they wanted it to come out.
And let me tell you something. We can discuss it at a later time, but the way they make it look like their product is good is right there fraudulent, because they use it. The placebo is not a placebo. It's a drug uses comparison that is worse than the one they're trying to get approved.
Yeah.
Like cisplatin or something. Is that going to prove anything?
That's right. Well, we're going to go ahead and continue with our show, but I wanted to let everybody know it's good that you're out of jail right now and you're back in your home crib for a little bit. And we want to have you back on next week. I want you to talk with your public defender, if that's your legal counsel. And this is another thing that just really is disturbing to me, is they confiscated all of her assets. And so she doesn't have any funds with which to defend herself. This is how the government works. And as Dennis pointed out in his previous, and when he was going through his little monologue there, we have no way to hold them accountable to this. It's a federal court. There's nothing that we can do about it. That grand jury, I tell you, there's a one federal prosecutor once bragged that he could indict a ham sandwich. That's how these grand juries operate. They don't work on what is right and what is the law and everything else. They just say, what do you want us to find?
Right. That's what one of the different people, a policeman that I talked to, this one is a policeman on a in the courthouse, and he said, the grand jury approves anything. The attorney says, it's not what the grand jury was created for, but it approves anything. It's just formality.
So you let us know which Thursday night you want to come back on, and we'll have you on a special show for a whole hour. And everybody out there in the listening audience, you'll check with our Facebook page for updates. We'll have updates on this of what Thursday we're going to have on.
I should be able to do it next Thursday, but I'll check with the attorney.
Probably be next Thursday, and we'll have her go over the things that she maybe should not tell everybody about, because you don't want to say something that could be used against you. In a court.
Yeah, there are some things I really cannot say.
Right,
but,
and so you want to make sure you get good advice before you come on and we start getting into this hot and heavy, because this is something that just burns me completely. It just upsets me so much. It's such a distortion of free market, and it's such an intrusion. It's actually costing people their lives because the government is trying to protect them. So they're dying from the chemotherapy. They're dying from cancer because they want to protect them from the treatment that works.
But actually, they're not even dying. They're not even dying of cancer. They're dying of treatment.
Yes. That's
they wouldn't be
true.
Dying that quickly with cancer. It would take a lot longer.
I had a friend, Greg Gandy, and he was a dear friend. We played softball together, and he had cancer, and he was diagnosed with cancer, and he'd seen many of his friends get cancer and take the treatments and just die very quickly. And he didn't want that to happen to him, so he went on a super nutritional diet. He lived for 15 years with cancer, and but about the last 6 months were very healthy and productive years, and those were good years that he had.
Not like the one
he had another friend. Halfway through this, about 7 years into it, he had another friend that came down with cancer, and he told him, do what I'm doing. And the guy followed the advice of his doctor instead, and the treatment killed him in a month.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. But no one, everybody will say it was a cancer that killed him. It wasn't. It's the chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is poison. They put the poison in there, and the theory is the cancer cell will absorb more than its share, and it will die first, and then we cut it off, and everything will be okay. But they oftentimes give the people too much poison, and it kills them.
And sometimes they do surgery, and that spreads the cancer because the bleeding spreads the cancer. And then they top it off with radiation, which causes cancer. We all know that.
Yeah.
And, but that is legal. That is okay. They can do that. They can kill the patient, and they still have to be paid. But I do not.
Yeah. And so this is going to be next week's show, and we're going to have you on, and this is going to be a great hour. I just know it. So thank you for coming on today and giving us an update, and we're glad that you're safe for now. And
for now.
We're going to do what we can to be on your side and to help you out with this. Maybe we can get in touch with some of our former guests that maybe can provide some advice and some help financially and whatever, and get you a good legal team and have this have a happy ending at least. So
I hope so.
We'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Dr. Harper.
Thank you.
Okay. Dennis, we're back to the elections now. That's just a horrible story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this develops and whatnot. You know, when you think about our election, one of the election items that I know you guys want to talk about is the marijuana deal. But, you know, in marijuana, it's got some, you know, dangerous side, you know, impacts just like alcohol does. Think about how ridiculous the FDA is when it comes to raw milk. I mean, do you know how strict the raw milk processing requirements are, and the number of individuals that try to sell raw milk? They've got a Jersey cow out back. They can only trade it with their neighbor. They can't dare sell it to their neighbor because the FDA has made it their policy that milk has to be pasteurized. It's got to be brought up to this temperature and treated in this way. And milk, if you think about it, is one of the more natural things that anybody could use, whether it's goat's milk or cow's milk, or eggs from the chickens in your backyard. How in the world did we surrender our right to use the marketplace and free choice and the availability of these products, and we surrendered that to this regulatory authority we call the FDA? It's really, really fascinating. The USDA and FDA are in lockstep with each other, and they basically control everything that we eat and drink and breathe, along with the EPA thrown in there on the breathing side of the fence. And at some point, people have to say, how did we lose it? How do we get it back?
That's right. And raw milk is so much better for you than the pasteurized milk. Now, pasteurized milk, the way they used to pasteurize it, didn't lose all the healthful benefits that raw milk has as raw milk, because they would do it for they would heat it for a longer period of time at a lower temperature, and it would kill the harmful bacteria, and it would leave some of the healthful bacteria in the milk. So when people drank it, it would get into your gut, and it would help you digest your food, and it was actually good for you. But they started flashing the milk at a, I think it was about 160 plus degrees for a minute or 2 minutes, and that killed everything. So it was sterile. And this is not only sterile, it's hard for your body, if your gut doesn't have the right bacteria in it, it's hard for your digestive system to break that down and use it as food. So it's actually kind of hard to digest at that point. And you add to the fact that it's kind of sweet, has some of the sugar in it from the cow milk. A lot of people get flatulence, and it's quite uncomfortable. It doesn't smell very good. And it's just all from that. It's all from the way that they've processed the milk. And you can take pills that can add those bacteria back into your digestive system, so you can kind of sort of digest milk, and or you can eat yogurt or something like that. But raw milk put it back in there naturally. Kind of, it was a natural product, and it actually, the people that produce raw milk, they have to be a lot more careful than the pasteurized milk you drink today has got pus in it and blood and all sorts of stuff like that. And they don't worry about that because there's nothing living in it. So you're drinking a bunch of crap, really. it's horrible. And the raw milk is, they have to be just super clean. There can't be any of that stuff. It has to be just almost a pure food source. So it's much cleaner. And that's just the perfect example how we've turned over authority of our food to a government entity. And someone with more money came in and said, well, this is how we're going to do it, and this is the only way it can be done. And we're a big corporation that makes milk. We can make enough milk for everybody in the world when our just for one factory right here and ship it around the world. And it's the only milk people in America can drink. And that's pretty much kind of – that's an exaggeration, but that's kind of how it worked. And when you give a governing authority the power over your food, the people that have the most money will be telling them what the food should look like and how nutritious it should be, and not the people who are consuming it, the people with the person or the entity with the most money. And that's why you should never give up those freedoms.
That's right. What's really interesting is in Oregon, we've also got a labeling initiative that says non-GMO food has to get labeled. Actually, all food would have to get labeled. You could recognize GMO versus non-GMO. But what's really interesting about that is we have that in the marketplace today if we would only use it. If you watch, everybody can search online for the debate of the decade. It's between Joel Salatin, a Shenandoah Valley farmer, very big in the natural food world, and Joe Mercola, who is a former USDA official. And Mercola is arguing for regulation, and Salatin argues that regulation, or actually labeling, doesn't belong in a regulatory body. It belongs in the hands of the consumers. By golly, if you want this product labeled and you want to know what's in it, demand it of the producer. And if he won't abide by your wishes, which is why he's in the market in the first place, is to provide you goods that you want to purchase, then don't buy from him anymore. And pretty soon there will be enough momentum. There will be a small guy who comes onto the scene who does labeling and meets your requirements and is providing you a good that you're willing to pay for. And all of a sudden the other guy will say, hey, I recognize I'm losing market share. I better get on board with what the market is demanding of me. And he'll meet the market need. And if he doesn't, that's fine. Let him go out of business. As soon as you get government involved, you take the power from the people and you give it to the bureaucrat. And then the bureaucrat turns right around and uses the power of government to put company A out of business and install company B as a monopoly. This is a tragedy happening all over America in today's modern regulatory world.
And it's a monopoly that was voted in by the voters.
Yeah.
And they don't say, well, I never voted for that, but you voted for the people that put that program together. And that's going back to your earlier statement of maybe only we should only have an informed electorate, and we shouldn't have people just voting on bumper sticker slogans and 5 or 10 second TV commercials or something, sound bites they hear on a news channel.
Right. Right, and that's the problem with the we started down that track when we were talking about the get out the vote nature of our of our culture. And at some point, what we really want is we want an informed culture that recognizes prudence and recognizes legitimate concerns that they want to delegate on a contractual basis, delegate those to the federal government, delegate those to the state government, delegate those to your local county government, and everything else, by golly, belongs to you and I and our respective families and our free association and our joining together. That's the real power of personal responsibility and self-governance.
Yeah, now I know that my partner here, Drew, has a very strong feelings on this, and I really respect it. I actually agree with him almost totally on it. I have a few small details that I think are there may be exceptions to what he, but maybe he feels the same way. I don't know, but I'm going to find out here in just a minute. But Drew, I think you should describe this because I probably won't do it as great a justice as you will. So,
I don't know. I mean, it's impossible for me to disagree with Dennis on pretty much any issue. Really, I agree with everything that he's saying, and he was saying things that I had intended to say, especially about the GMO labeling. You know, I don't think that government is ever a solution to anything. That coincidentally, Dennis and I have both run for Congress
in the second congressional district. Yes.
Exactly, the exact same position. Dennis just took it more seriously than I did. I was more the protest write-in candidate last time around, and I got a couple hundred votes at least. I think.
Yeah, I actually, Drew, I was contemplating writing you in again.
Well, you can if you want. I give any of you permission. But, you know, I came to the conclusion after that experience, you know, I was thinking about, well, you know, should I do a serious run? Should I really do this, really try? And then I got to thinking that, you know, trying to change the government from within is like, you know, joining the mafia to stop crime. I don't think that you could be very effective. And we campaigned really hard for Ron Paul. And then, you know, so a lot of our friends were asking me, well, so are you going to write in Ron Paul? I said, no, I'm not going to vote for anybody for president. You know, I'm going to vote on the local issues, but I'm not voting beyond that. I'm not voting for anybody. And actually, I don't want Ron Paul to be the president because I think he'll be much more effective once he gets out of government, retires from government. And I think he has been, actually.
Yes, I agree.
I think, yeah. And I think that what we've seen is the real Ron Paul, the anarchist Ron Paul. You know, you hear Ron Paul using the word statist all of the time now. He held back before. He doesn't have to worry about the politics anymore. And so I'm really pleased with that outcome. You know, I think that since then, I mean, we've been pushing issues to the forefront. You know, issues that are important to us, and you know, promoting liberty, pushing to reduce and ultimately eliminate government, and it feels like we're getting somewhere, and so when it comes down to, I guess what you wanted to talk about was the morality.
Yeah, voting is kind of violence.
Yeah, and I don't even think the morality is the right word. Let's talk about the ethics of voting. You know, and this is, you know, and I always bring up this analogy of my next door neighbor. My next door neighbor is an elderly woman, lives by herself except when her family's visiting her, and so things sometimes she needs help with things, and she'll call me up or see me outside and ask me to come over, and I've fixed sinks and clogged toilets and worked on her irrigation system. I've done all sorts of things, whatever she needs. And And I do this voluntarily. You know, she's my neighbor. She's not a relative, but I do this because she's my neighbor and I care about her. And but you know, in a pure status system and the way that things work right now, you know, let's say that, you know, helping your neighbor was a government program, which it is in many ways. You know, I wouldn't be able to just go over and help my neighbor. My other neighbor would call me and say, "Hey, Mrs. Carr's got a problem with her toilet. We've picked out a plumber that we want to fix it, and we want you to pay for it." And you know, and I of course would say, "Well, no, I'll just go over and fix it." And I go, "No, you have to pay for the plumber that we selected." "Well, I'm not going to." "Well, then we're going to send costume men with guns after you, and we're going to throw you in jail." And you know, and that's just how the system works. You know, just quite simply, that's how the system works. And I'm frustrated every time there's something on the ballot that's going to affect my property taxes. It seems that it always passes. And
even when it doesn't, they just put it on our water bill.
Yeah, or they just tack it on the water bill, and this is just—I can't opt out of this. It's impossible to opt out of it, and that's where it's just completely unethical. And the fact that I could actually lose my greatest investment. You know, I could lose my home. You know, where I live. That's on the line with something that I might not go along with. I look at the property tax bill, and it's. None of it is stuff that I use. None of it is stuff that I want. None of it is stuff that I support. I haven't consented to any of it. And then it gets higher and higher every year. And then you look at my business properties that I lease, you know, and then I pay more property taxes there as well. They're triple net leases. And so it affects me on a massive scale. This year especially, we're just getting completely hammered next month. You know, it's
and then you have personal property tax if you're in business,
right? If
computers are taxed, and they kind of try and depreciate them, but they don't depreciate them as fast as the computers depreciate in real life. So,
well,
you know, I found myself paying taxes on computers I hadn't used for 2 years. They were thrown away, and I said, "Well, you guys are charging me for this. I don't even have that computer anymore. Come and take it."
Well, yeah, and that whole thing
we can find it.
That whole thing with the county is just silly. Where you got some little business, and you gotta fill this form out every year that makes a list of everything you have, right down to books in your library, and then they decide if you're gonna pay a tax on it. I've never had enough equipment to justify them levying a tax, and it's just sorry, my dog's talking to me. It just gets ridiculous that so many small businesses even have to be troubled with such a thing. I would encourage anybody out there in this situation to stop filling it out and sending it in. Bottom line, we have to stop complying with this garbage, and ultimately we've got to start defunding these government operations. I mean, that's the only way to stop it. Why encourage it? And that's the whole thing about voting. You know, I'm starting to sound like Doug Casey here. You know, and his five reasons not to vote, you know, and one of them is, you know, why encourage these people? You're picking the lesser of two evils, which means that the guy that you voted for thinks that you support him, that you like him, but it's just
a mandate.
You hated him less than the other guy, you know, and but it, and another thing too is that it looks on almost every single issue that we're called to vote on, it's almost split. Everything's like really close. Everything's, you know, always like 50-50 or close to 50-50. It's so close. So look at all of the people that are disenfranchised. And if you're libertarian-minded people like we are, no matter how you're registered right now, but if you're libertarian-minded, you've been disenfranchised almost every single election, every single time, over and over and over again. Things do not go the way that you want them to go. It's extremely frustrating, and you can't opt out of this. You know, that's the thing. It's unethical because you can't opt out of it. You know, this is another Doug Casey analogy. You know, if you were a member of a golf club, or some other club, whatever, you know, you have votes on things. You know, what are we going to do here? And and that's different, because if you don't like the way that the group's operating, if you don't like the way that they're voting, you just leave the group. You know, okay, I've had it, you know, or I'm going to go form my own golf club, whatever. You could do that. Or I'm going to golf by myself from now on. You could do things like that. But how do you opt out of this mess? You know, and things, almost every vote, especially the county level, when these folks are voting on things, I mean, they think it's free. I mean, I've heard people talking about how they want the water park and how great it'll be. And these are people that don't own any property and they think it's just free, you know?
Yeah. I had an idea when I was trying to think of, I didn't want to be just totally negative on voting, because I think that, I guess part of me is still trying to discard the normalcy bias that was planted through years of propaganda about how it's your duty to vote and it's your responsibility and all this. But I think that if you're voting for something that increases freedom for people, that means that it eliminates a tax, it repeals the bureaucratic regulation or a bureaucracy that regulates us or something of that nature. And if you're voting on something like that, I think that vote, even if it was a small majority that won, even the people that didn't favor that would still have their condition improved by the removal of that, by having increased freedom. And they may not like it at first, but I think they would appreciate it in the future. Maybe not. I might be putting words in their mouth or imagining something, an outcome. But I think that there are some cases where, and as you're saying, in local issues, where it might be worthwhile to vote, or if you're voting for something that you really truly believe in. I think my best example is this, was the vote that they took in Siskiyou County to form a Jefferson Republic. I think that was something that would have increased the general freedom of everybody living in Siskiyou County by a lot. And it would have done away with a lot of regulations that were really ruining their pursuit of happiness. So that's something I would get behind and vote for. I think that'd be a good reason to vote. But I agree with you that when you're voting for you don't really care who wins, because you know if this one person wins, he's going to think he has a mandate, and you don't really agree with very much of what he stands for. But just because he's a little bit better than the other candidate, it may not, you may be sending the wrong message to him if you vote for him.
You guys are right on the money when it comes to this. What becomes really interesting is the idea of the U.S. Constitution had this concept of enumerated powers for the federal bureaucracy. In other words, you and I and our families, we live in this neighborhood and somebody keeps breaking into all of our houses. And instead of all three of us staying up all night, we decide we're going to hire local protection. And at the federal level, we decide we do need somebody to manage, you know, immigration and manage protection, defense of our homes, if you will. And we enumerate those powers. We want you to not only walk the beat, we want you to cruise through the neighborhood once a day or once every hour or something, and we assign you some responsibilities. And we say we'll also allow you to have certain new people enter our community. And as they enter our community, you'll do background checks and you'll ensure that they contribute to our community. This is like Dr. Savage, language, borders, and culture. And we agree that you should take that responsibility, because all three of us are spending all night sitting up and watching over stuff and checking on our children and making sure our horses are safe. And we really want to just give the job to someone who can do that. At the county level, that would be the sheriff. At the national level, that would be the Department of Defense. Oops, the Department of War, right?
Yeah.
And we enumerate those things and we say, here's your constitution. You're given these roles and responsibilities. That's all you get to do, and that's all we're paying you to do. Now, what do we do as a body of individuals when the federal government takes some other, you know, item, they induce us to vote for it or profess some certain end or undertake something that they never even apprised us of, and they have false pretenses, and they exceed our expressed consent, and they commit us to something that was no longer part of our original agreement. Are we bound by their decisions? And the answer is no. It's Doug Casey's golf course example. In 1854, in October, in the Edinburgh Review in England, there was Railway Morals and Railway Policy paper that was published, and he used the example of a book club, and suppose that members of that book club, the greater number of those members, decide they think practicing with rifles was better than reading. Can they use the money, because they're the majority of the book club membership now, they're a bunch of guys who think that they ought to be buying powder and ball and targets. Remember, this is in 1854. And they would rather buy that than buy books. Does everybody within that book club have the obligation to support their endeavor in target practice? The answer is no. Look, we joined a book club. We joined a golf club. We've got no business running down the road and, you know, turning this endeavor from a literary excursion in Dickens to an excursion in management of our firearms. This is a violation of the original charter. Today in the United States of America, we're living in that world where they violated their original charter, and we are no longer bound by, you know, this idea of having to stick with it because we're all in it together.
That is a perfect summation. We're coming up on the end of the program, and you timed it almost perfectly. If you could have stretched it about 10 more seconds. I'm just kidding. No, that's awesome. You kind of left it with nothing else to be said on the matter, Dennis. That was an awesome statement.
you can read that in the online Library of Liberty, Man Versus the State. It's written by Herbert Spencer.
That's great. I would suggest everybody do that. Next week, join us. We're going to have Dr. Carpenter on. And thank you all for listening tonight, whether you're on a podcast or listening live. And Dennis, thank you for being here again. We'll see you at least next end of last Thursday of November. So okay. Good night, everybody.
You're bound to break one more time.